Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you. Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
Through this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Hamm, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you know, I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer here at The Athletic, coming at you with a late November pod. My guy Anthony Slater out west, Fred Katz out east. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Sir?
Let's go, let's go. Somebody jump in.
I'm doing fantastic. Sam, how are you? I'm ready to talk about, what exactly are we talking about today, Fred? This is a Fred Katz idea.
This is a Fred Katz special. So it's deep enough in the season, and Fred, I'm going to throw it to you this way. I mean, this is the time of year where it's somewhat of a purgatory, right? Because the early season is still continuing. We're almost to that kind of 25-game stretch where we might, you know, really substantively start breaking things down. But we are not quite to the time of year that where it gets a lot more exciting when you're talking trade season in mid-December. You've got rosters opening up in terms of possibilities. The February trade deadline a couple of months past that. But this, at Fred's kind of guidance and leadership here, is the pod where we are going to talk about which teams, which players, which front offices, you know, all of the above, need to turn around and might in fact do so. Fred, do I have that about right? Is that what we're getting into today?
Yes. I mean, I figured just predicting, not even necessarily need to, but just predicting turnarounds.
The ones we see coming.
Going through, things that aren't going great right now, but we think are going to change.
And I think just
give a positive
for good measure,
spin on some negativity.
Well, yeah, but I'd be remiss if I didn't. We're going to add in a little bit of negativity, I think, on the back end. I think
can't
we
do
have,
the, like, you hey, will. You're yes. playing decently, yes. but like you're about to tank.
Right, right. I'm gonna put it this way. My teaser is the regular listeners of the show will know what this means. I will be fined, and you know, by way of Fred's swear jar by the end of this pod, based on the teams that might not turn around. We'll get into that later.
Of course,
but Fred's. I know you're shocked.
Oh, we got a yeah. Lakers segment on the way.
Hey,
like
you're giving it away, man. Giving it away. All right, Fred, top of mind for you when you were, you know, kind of baking this idea, who came to mind first? Where are you taking us?
All right. Well, I thought, by the way, about leading the fact that Jakob Poeltl is allowing 68% shooting at the rim right now and that there's no way that that's going to continue, especially if they trade him to a good situation. But I'm not going to do that.
Well, Fred,
I'm not going to do that.
Because one of those situations happens to be potentially the Warriors with this James Wiseman situation they're trying to handle. Tell me why Jakob Poeltl is not defending like he previously was. Because if you are a team like the Warriors or another team, you should probably figure out why he's not defending that way.
Yeah, you know, quite honestly, I haven't dug in enough to the Jakob Poeltl film
fraudulent.
To really know exactly why. I imagine it has a little something to do with the fact that the Spurs just don't really have, like, he is just taking drivers to the face all the time right now. And that's going to be tough on anyone. They also have so many guys in and out of the lineup all the time.
The Rudy Gobert syndrome?
I think it's just tough. Yeah. I do have something that I unironically wanted to discuss, though, a turnaround that I am predicting. Let's talk about the Dallas Mavericks role players. They just can't hit a three. They can't hit a three, and I just refuse to believe that this is going to continue. Tim Hardaway has a 46% effective field goal percentage. I mean, the Mavs are 9-10 at the time of us recording this. Tim Hardaway has a 46% effective field goal percentage. Reggie Bullock is shooting 28% from three. And Reggie Bullock, who, by the way, gets off to a molasses-like slow start every single year. And then in the second half, for some reason, I don't know if he needs to change his summer workout regimen or if what the heck it is. But he just gets off to a slow start every year and then eventually turns it around. Maxi Kleber is shooting 31% from three. They're role players who should be shooting well from three. You know, Hardaway's at 29% and 31% from the field. Like, they're role players who are normally like Tim Hardaway is a reliable 3-point shooter. Like, we can talk about the warts in his game and all, but he's that dude hits threes.
He is coming off a pretty bad injury. Like, he broke his foot, like missed the whole season. So, you know, rusty, I'm sure he's trying to shake off, but also, like, you never know if guys are going to be the same players after these type of injuries. It's like, at times that can debilitate a body. I don't know where Tim Hardaway Jr.'s career is going from here, but I think that's like a notable part of it.
And big picture, yeah, of course, guys, this is not good, right? The Mavs, I'm trying to pull their schedule up at the moment. They've lost four in a row. And
Warriors on Tuesday in Dallas.
That's a tough one. Your Dubs are playing better, especially got that second road win, Slater. That was a big one.
Oh, my. They're rolling now on the road. 2-9.
Yeah, I need, you know, and I know we're going to kind of zone in on those role players, Fred, and let you dig in even more. But big picture, you look at Luka right now, and it's one of the more puzzling, might not be the right word, but, you know, in a vacuum, he would be, I think, most people's leading MVP candidate at the moment, but they're 9-10. And then, you know, part of being an MVP, of course, is kind of rising the tide, if you will, and the guys around you, and that's not happening. So I think if this trend continues, you know, we're going to have a tricky MVP discussion as it surrounds Luka. Because it's not, I thought about it in the context of Jokic winning back-to-back in Denver, where to me, okay, a guy carrying a team that doesn't have enough around him, it's different from a narrative standpoint when a guy loses players due to injury as opposed to, oh, the organization, you know, let Jalen Brunson get away and just simply didn't build in the kind of way that people were hoping for. So, yeah, Dallas is struggling a bit right now.
You know, their metrics signal that the record's a little deceiving. They actually have the 9th best net rating in the league. They're positive, you know, they're 9-10, but, you know, their point differential is positive. So, I mean, that's maybe that evens out over the course of the season. Obviously, they're struggling right now, but, you know, I'm looking 12th best defensive rating. Where are they? Offensive rating. This is, why can't I, so they're 12th best offense, 12th best defense right now. It's kind of, you know, that would be typically better than a 9-10 team.
Sure. Well, Fred, so, within that, what does your crystal ball tell you about young Christian Wood? Because for me, he's an important part here. And you know, I've read some stuff this morning from colleague and friend Mark Stein about how the Mavs record when Christian plays big minutes is not pretty, and that Jason Kidd continues to struggle because defensively, you know, Christian is a liability. He's one of those guys that after they lost Brunson, you know, they were hoping that Christian would pop. But so far, it's been tricky.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are really good. But like you said, like, the on-offs are not great, and they're obviously really concerned about his defense. They're playing Dwight Powell at the five. Right now, according to Cleaning the Glass, by the way, they're about a point per 100 possession worse when Wood is on the floor defensively. It's going to be really interesting to see how that continues, because you just know Jason Kidd does not trust him defensively right now. But the numbers are good, and he's one of the guys shooting it.
What are they offensively when he's on the floor compared?
Way better.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I understand that, you know, part of the way that Jason Kidd overhauled that entire situation last year, and it worked, was like defenders and Luka, they created a defensive mindset that we didn't really even think could be created out of their personnel. It was impressive what Jason Kidd did last season, but, you know, adjust to your roster. Your new roster includes Christian Wood. To me, they're still better when Christian Wood's on the floor, even if you might not like what he does, you know, in minor ways defensively. You're a better team. I mean, you could argue he's their second best player. That is probably an issue in itself that he might be their second best player, but you could argue that's their second best player and he needs to play more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem at all with him coming off the bench, because their starting lineup with Dwight Powell in there has actually been really good. They're like plus 10 per 100 possessions with Dwight Powell in the starting lineup. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I feel like the best version of this team is one that figures out a way to make it work on both sides of the floor with Christian Wood. Like, they're not going to reach the best version of themselves if Christian Wood is, you know, 24 minutes a game and not in there in the most important moments. What a weird offseason, right? They make the Christian Wood trade, and Jason Kidd is basically acting as if, like, it was a trade for a bench player, and that was about it. And he was kind of their big acquisition. And then they give multiple years to JaVale McGee, and JaVale has you know, was a weird contract at the time, and it's kind of been disappointing since. It's just, what a weird
why add off-season. Two centers like that? You know, they used an important tool to get JaVale McGee, you know, mid-level money. And I remember at the time, and this is, you know, Sam, you probably remember this, but the Mavericks were kind of kicking the tires on Gary Payton II. And obviously, Gary Payton II hasn't played a game yet, so I'm not here to argue that he would have changed their team. But, like, you probably should have got, like, more of a wing, you know, perimeter guy. Like, you know, consider, like, Wood and JaVale, while letting Brunson walk, kind of made a roster imbalance.
Okay, well, we have to mention one thing. What do we think of the Kemba Walker addition? Do we think there's anything to it?
I mean,
I do not. No, I mean, listen, it's been an interesting year when it comes to former All-Stars, you know, having to kind of face Father Time, if you will. There's a bunch of them still out of work. There's guys like, you know, Mr. Westbrook, who we're not allowed to talk about, who have to have role adjustments. But you reach that stage of your career, you know, there's a reason Kemba was on the shelf, I think, for as long as he was. You know, who knows, maybe we'll be stunned, we'll be wrong. I don't see it coming. I don't see that as an impact move at all.
Yeah, agreed. I think you're right. Kemba just struggled to create his own shot so much last year.
I mean, you covered him, right? Like,
I covered him. Yeah, I mean, he had some really big games. He just really struggled to create his own shot. He couldn't get to the rim. The paint opportunities are just way, way down. And, you know, the scoring burst didn't come enough to justify the defense.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We were just talking about Christian Wood trying to survive
exactly. defensively. Yeah, it's a little antithetical to what Kidd is doing to go the Kemba route on big minutes. So we'll see. So, Fred, I can't read you here when it comes to the turnarounds. Are we predicting a turnaround for these Mavs who, by the way, 4 in a row is not even putting it well enough. They've lost 7 out of 10 after starting 9-3, so a tough slide. But is this a turnaround prediction on your part?
Yes, it is a turnaround because I think their role players are just going to shoot better. Like, I do not think Reggie Bullock is ending the year anywhere near 28% on threes. I do not think that Tim Hardaway is going to continue to shoot this poorly. I think their role players are going to pick it up. They get good shots. They create a lot of open threes. Luka is a machine at creating those sorts of threes. By the way, Luka's only 31% from three too, as great as he's been. And he started off really slow shooting from three last year and then totally turned it around in the second half. So I just think they're going to be a team that makes way more threes in the last 60 games of the season. I think they're going to climb offensively. Luka's just too good for you not to.
All right. Very good stuff. I'm going to move on in this way, guys. 12 minutes in, we are slightly adjusting the framing of our discussion today. The turnaround topic remains, but I think, you know, let's pick a few teams where it essentially looks like that, you know, they got this fork in the road and they have to go one way or the other. And I think we're going to have differing opinions on which way these different teams are going to go. But I want to throw it Slater's direction with a squad that his team played against just last night, because we've talked about them a lot. The Minnesota Timberwolves with their too big approach that is very different than some of the other too big approaches out in Cleveland and things of that nature. You know, they get smacked around by the Warriors. They are currently sitting at 10-10. We had John Krasinski on the pod. Was that last week, Slater? I think it was last week. 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago, I think, maybe.
Okay. JK talking about, you know, the one of the more fascinating teams in the league, and we continue to see and kind of an up and down performance. You know, last night was not good. You know, that was their second loss in a row. They'd won 5 in a row before that. They were kind of finding their sea legs. How are you guys seeing the latest on the T-Wolves front?
I mean, yesterday was a concerning performance. You know, at home, matinee, marquee. You know, I think it's, you know, I think the Wolves love those Sunday afternoon, like, you know, bring a marquee opponent in and kind of showcase themselves. And like, they were just low energy. The Warriors were going right at Gobert. Not only is Jordan Poole, who, you know, has been inefficient to start the season, he had one of his better games off the bench, but he's like driving right at Gobert and finishing over him. And you can hear Draymond through the, you know, wiring of the rim yelling like right at his chest. And there's a video, of course, like Gobert tries a post move and fumbles the ball and falls down, and the Warriors are pushing it up court, and Draymond's just sitting there laughing at Gobert. because we know Draymond and Gobert's history, and you know, Draymond does not mind, I think, embarrassing Rudy. But, you know, Draymond played a lot of center in that game, and the Warriors out-rebounded the Wolves 39-25, I think. Six offensive rebounds the whole game for Minnesota, eight for the Warriors, even though they're playing tiny, and 137 points, right? Even as Minnesota was supposed to be kind of solving some of this offensive puzzle that is, I think, hard to put together, supposed to be able to defend, right? You got Rudy Gobert in the regular season, like, don't give up 47 in the first quarter in that game, 137 total. And you know who I thought had a bad game? Anthony Edwards. And I mean just from an energy standpoint. Like, you know, he just, if you look, it was blown rotation. It was getting blown by Poole on the perimeter. Jonathan Kuminga was coming off the bench, and like, he's had his own energy problems this season, but he was locked in, and Edwards wasn't. He was pressing full court and causing turnovers because Edwards was kind of being a little lackadaisical. Again, we've talked about it plenty, but just the vibes emanating have not been great.
You know what's really a problem for them? Part of the justification for the Rudy Gobert trade was how they lost that series to Memphis in the playoffs last year, which was Brandon Clark flying everywhere to get offensive rebounds. They were one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the league last year, and it really showed. And part of the justification for the Rudy Gobert trade was, well, this is one guy who is going to mask over the team's biggest issues, just one person, right? He's going to mask over the rim protection stuff because he's Rudy Gobert, and he's going to mask over the defensive rebounding stuff because he's Rudy Gobert. They are 25th in defensive rebounding right now. And this team was put together to be awesome at that. Not to like get up out of the bottom five or bottom 10, but in order for this team to be really good, they have to be awesome at that. They have to end possessions. And right now, when another team misses a shot, that other team is getting the rebound almost a third of the time, like 31% of the time. And that's just, for a team built the way that it's built, that's not what you can have. And I actually think most of it is on the wings and the guards. They just don't really have rebounding. None of them are reboundable. It's really just Gobert and Towns, all the rebounds. And defensive rebounding, like, you have to be, Anthony Edwards has got to put a body on somebody who's crashing in from the wing. Like, you have to be able to have that sort of coordination as a defense. And to me, a team built like that, and they're not grabbing defensive rebounds. They're bottom 10, by the way, in offensive rebounding, too. If that's the case, it's just like, you are not going to come close to your ceiling if you don't solve that.
Yeah, I mean, just watching it yesterday, it was bad. Because, like, the Warriors aren't a great rebounding team. The Warriors are trying to find a way to win that game, typically, despite the rebound disadvantage. It was like, no, they also had an advantage in that category. And remember early in the season when NBA came out with his NBA rank, and I think one of the stories, I remember John noting it, Krasinski, but it was like they were the only team in the league that had three, I think it was either top 20 or top 25 players. You know, Towns, Gobert, Edwards were all considered top 25. And it did feel a little early on Edwards, but it was like, you know, I think it was trying to foresee it, but that just hasn't happened. And I think that, to me, there's a lot of issues, including, I don't think Towns and Gobert fit together, but like, this is also a team that doesn't seem to be unlocking the best version of Anthony Edwards.
Did you guys see the quote from Austin Rivers off the game?
Something about them not playing big, even though they are big.
Yeah, from our buddy, Mr. Krasinski. This is Austin Rivers talking about that loss against the Warriors. If we are going to play big, we got to dominate in the paint. If we're going to play big, we got to be big. Their big man was Draymond. I mean, kind of laying it bare in a way that Austin likes to. Yeah, turnaround wise, fellas, I don't know where I'm at. In terms of, listen, title contending status, which is actually something that kind of got talked about coming into the year, at least from the standpoint of the Minnesota trying to swing for the fences. You know, you're not going to have anybody in the league predicting that at this point. I mean, we're literally, I think, legitimately talking about, is Minnesota going to make sure they secure a playoff spot? I know, again, it's very early, but we are almost to that quarter point, and they're sitting there in the 10th spot in the West. This is not what they had in mind. So, and with that framing of it, I personally would not be predicting a turnaround of any exceptional degree. How are you guys seeing it?
I think they're going to, like, make the playoffs. I didn't like the Gobert trade at the time.
Are they going to win a series? Let's at least say that much. You know what I mean? Like you know, playoffs is, the idea of them missing the playoffs was inconceivable after they made that trade. But are they going to be good enough to even win a series in the playoffs?
Man, they got to get the right matchup. Because they just scream a team that, like, you know, they're going to have real trouble with certain kinds of teams in the playoffs. And I'm looking, and I'm like, almost every kind of team.
Right.
You know, that was all, like, even when they made the trade, you're like, they might win a lot of regular season games. But, you know, when it comes down to it, are they going to be able to play both those guys in a playoff setting in crunch time?
Right.
I'm not predicting some rosy end to their season. No, I'm not.
Yeah, Fred, I'm in the same boat. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, I don't see them winning a playoff series. The West is deep. Like, there are a lot of good teams.
The West is weirdly deep, but also, like, feels thinner than it ever has.
Well, like, it's deep, but then, like, you know, a parity from top to bottom. Call it parity, call it, you know, too much mediocrity.
Yeah.
Right, but it's like...
But they're
we know. We know Denver's going to get better because, I mean, I have, like, Jamal Murray on my list of predicting a turnaround. I just assume he's going to get healthier and feel better, and he's off to a slow start, and I think Denver will be better. Phoenix is just as good as they were last year. Memphis hasn't had with its entire rotation healthy, and it's 13-8 or 12-8 right now. New Orleans is 11-8, but I think they're better. Like, they are underplaying their net rating big time and have real potential. The Clippers are 12-9, and they haven't had Kawhi, and they can't score, and they're still doing stuff. I mean, like...
But they got Zubats, baby.
Oh, man.
29 rebounds.
That is insane. It's just like that's five teams right there. And Golden State is turning it on. So it's like, that's six teams right there. Now we're talking about being in play-in range.
Indeed. All right. Before we get to, we're going to go to Denver in a minute here, Fred, because you mentioned them. And I'm throwing this at you guys out of left field. But can we talk about the Pacers a little bit? Not necessarily. I mean, it's a little bit of a turnaround thing. They're playing well. So if anything, it's, are we predicting a downturn, if you will? But even beyond what direction they're going in, they are quickly becoming, I think, one of the most interesting teams in the league because of the question roster-wise of what they're going to do here. You know, today, as we do this pod, you've got the Lakers and Pacers competing this evening down in L.A. That sparks all kinds of storylines about the Miles Turner, Buddy Hield for Russell Westbrook trade possibility that remains that the Lakers had essentially turned their nose at in heading into the season, but are known to still be chewing on. You know, they didn't want to give up their two firsts in that deal. They are concerned about, you know, doing a trade with that many assets that's not going to make them a title contender. You guys know that story well. But from the Pacers' side, here's where, to me, it's so interesting. You know, their owner, Herb Simon, 88 years old, I believe, at this point, widely known to be somebody who, for a very, very long time now, has preferred competing, even if it's, you know, a mediocre level of competing, over rebuilding. That in that small market, you know, he just wants to, you know, essentially kind of give the fans a reason to come out, have a team that's competitive. If you can find a way to be a title contender like they were back in the Frank Vogel, Paul George days, then that's great. But, you know, has been against stripping the thing down completely in terms of a rebuild. So not only did the Pacers have the Lakers tonight, but they have the Kings on Wednesday, which then, you know, brings up young Tyrese Halliburton, right? So you have Tyrese doing incredible things, leading the league in assists, looking like a rising star. He is a rising star. But then, you know, if you're Tyrese, every day you go to work right now, you don't, you know, be thankful that you've got a Miles Turner and a Buddy Hield. And obviously, you know, Benedict Mathurin is going to be there a long time. But, you know, the front office with Kevin Pritchard leading the way could pick up the phone at any point, do the Lakers deal, do some other deal, and it's going to completely change the trajectory of what they're doing this year. We can't read, you know, Kevin's mind and Herb's mind, but what sense do you guys have there as far as where they take this?
Well, first, Sam Amick, you had a perfect chance to plug a story that we'll have coming in the Athletic on Tuesday.
It's a lob, baby. I was throwing
it. It was a lob? You. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if it was just a whiff, a strikeout. Me and Sam will be kind of revisiting the Domantas Sabonis, Tyrese Halliburton trade before that game Wednesday, because those two franchises are randomly now connected very much, because that was such a kind of gamble trade from both sides, I guess. But as far as the Pacers go, you know, I think if they shouldn't obsess about the moment. They shouldn't obsess about the fact that they are an encouraging 11-8, because I think you could go back last season when they made the Sabonis trade, went to Halliburton, and in a lot of ways kind of did, you know, fold the tents late in the season. I was looking at their, just through this story that we're doing, I was looking at their schedule last year. They lost their last 10. They really plummeted late in the season. What did that produce? Benedict Mathurin. You know what I mean? If you're trying to convince your owner, like the benefits of committing to, you know, somewhat of a, it could be a soft rebuild. You don't have to get the first pick. Obviously, you'd love it this season, but you can get game changers if you're at 5-6 compared to if you're at 10-11. Sometimes.
And I think, to interject real quickly, Slater, yeah. I think I'm accurate on this. They could have. I think they're going to have three firsts next year. They have Cleveland. I mean,
Boston and the Brogdon deal. Is that right?
Let me pull it up here. I shouldn't have spoke that soon. I'll pull it up. But yeah, they've got two late firsts coming their way in addition to their pick.
Yeah. So I just mean, you know, to me, I understand if Halliburton's like, you know, I really need Miles Turner or Hield, but like this is a long term. They found their backcourt. Everything beyond those two. I mean, you could throw Duarte in there. He's a nice young player. But like generally, you're building around those two. And you don't need to be obsessive about being 11-8. What I see as far as the numbers is like they're shooting like crazy, right? Miles Turner 43% from three, Mathurin 42% from three, Nembhard 40, Buddy Hield 37 on 9.8 attempts per game. They're just shooting really well. They're scoring. Rick Carlisle's got them like playing at a very fast pace. Maybe they could stay fringe playing, but that's about it in my opinion.
Look. Something I'm writing for tomorrow morning is how part of the reason that the Knicks are underwhelmingly 9-8 or 9-11 is because they just consistently lose the 3-point game. Like they're just giving back points from beyond the arc. Helps when you have a lot of guys who can chuck it. Mathurin, by the way, is so fun. And every time I watch him play, I think, could a rookie ever win sixth man of the year? Because if the Pacers make the playoffs and Mathurin just continues to come off the bench and is averaging an efficient 19 a game and is dunking on dudes left and right and is a huge contributor to that fast pace that they play. And their bench lineups, by the way, are that's part of the reason they're really good. They're just killing teams with their bench. Like, could Mathurin be the first rookie to win sixth man of the year? It's obviously way too early to
not if they trade for Russell Westbrook and he comes and takes that job, Fred.
You know what? That's a $12 million fine right there. That is a ridiculous fine. That is
Russ
an absurd
is going
injection.
To
by
steal
the way, I'm fining you. By the way, I'm fining you. By the way, for taking this joyous 11-8 Pacer start where they're fun and Tyrese Halliburton, like people have to stop saying Tyrese Halliburton is gonna be an All Star because he is an All Star right now, and Mathurin is fantastic. They've got inspiring young players. Miles Turner's having a career year. He's killing it defending the rim. They're 11-8. Pacers fans are excited, and you're coming on, and you're like, well, how about that Lakers trade, right? Everybody looks at the Pacers from the vantage point through the lens of the Lakers. It's like, no, let's look at the Pacers through the lens of the Pacers. They're actually really fun to watch. They're extremely well-coached. They take great threes. Halliburton, meanwhile, is extraordinary. His pacing is unbelievable for someone who's 21 or 22 years old. I think he has a chance to for sure be a 50, 40, 90 guy at some point in his career. And he's leading the league in assists by far. And he creates he's probably the lead reason why they take and make all these threes. Like the Buddy Hield number on threes is totally sustainable. I mean, he could shoot even better than that. He's Buddy Hield, but like he creates so many threes with his pacing and with his ability to create these spot up shots. It's amazing to watch him come around like pick and rolls and stuff.
Well, and that's kind of what was at the root of the question for me, Fred, is that idea that, you know, again, like Slater said, we're writing about the Halliburton Sabonis deal. And so I'm looking at Tyrese's season and almost preemptively being disappointed for the young guy, because if they do a trade like the Lakers one or another, like if they do break it down, you know, it's going to have an impact on you know, what he has around him, what he's able to do. I mean, who knows if they, you know, what deal they do or how where it goes. But it's a weird season where you have all this hype, all this positivity, the type of stuff that I'm sure Pacers fans are enjoying, not only because they're playing pretty well, but because some of the guys doing it are young enough that you get excited about the future. But then, you know, it could have a setback in terms of on-court here in the next couple of months.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yep.
Miles Turner feels like he's 38 because he's just kind of been on the block on the Pacers for like, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
Miles Turner's only 26 years old.
No, he's really
it's good. It's not that crazy if they just want to try to re-sign him.
Yeah, I don't have clarity on his plans, but I think it's safe to say that, I mean, if he's out there granting interviews to ESPN about how well he would look.
Analyzing why the Lakers should do the Miles Turner trade.
Don't think they have a lot of confidence in him.
Inside the mind of Miles
That's
Turner.
That's fair.
Coming back. All right, we're going to keep it moving on the other side of this break. Gentlemen, what is coming next? Tell the listeners which squad. We're going to do Denver? Want to jump back to the West?
Sure, all we right. can do Denver.
Denver and all things Jamal Murray.
Yeah, that's fine.
Slater, no?
I kind of wanted to throw Brooklyn as a team I think is going to have an encouraging month or two ahead.
Denver first and then Brooklyn. That's called the teaser in the business. We'll be right back.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, guys, we got to jump from east to west here, and then we'll get back to east for Slater's Nets. But Fred, you piqued my interest with the Jamal Murray discussion. I've always enjoyed covering him. He's an incredible player. Would love nothing more than to see Jamal get back to his bubble status. I know he hates kind of that framing of his story, but it, you know, and when I was covering those games in person, I remember talking to Jamal after one of his 50-point outbursts. You know, he had the incredible series against Utah. That was Jamal at his best, and that was explosive Jamal, turn on a dime Jamal, creative in the lane Jamal, obviously doing his thing from long range Jamal. And if he can be that guy, or something close to it, then Denver is the title contender that we thought they would be. If I was sensing things correctly from you a couple minutes ago, you feel like it's going in a good direction there. Fred, yes, no?
Oh, I thought you were talking to Slater.
No, this is your this
you,
is your
you were
squad.
The Nuggets optimist.
This is all you, man.
I am the Nuggets optimist. Yeah, I Jamal Murray before the injury was just so good when he was able to get around those Jokic screens and pull up. And his pull-up jump shooting is such a ginormous weapon for that team, right? And not just the not just on pick and rolls, right? Also on dribble handoffs. Once he gets that element back and he is just continuing to kill it the way that he did, and I fully believe that he will, it just adds a totally different element to that offense. I mean, that has the potential to be the best offense in the NBA with Jokic's passing and scoring, Murray's off the dribble abilities, and then obviously Porter out there as well. I feel like the pull-up shooting is going to change everything when he starts hitting like he was before. And Sam, like, do you disagree? I feel like that's totally coming.
No, I need to watch them a little more closely. You could see it coming a couple weeks ago when I was diving into the numbers and watching their games. I think he'll get there. And honestly, it's interesting to me because I feel like Jamal and Klay Thompson, and feel free to add a name or two if anybody comes to mind for you guys, are on this list of players right now where, you know, they don't get enough grace when it comes to the way we discuss them based on the injuries that they overcame. You know, Klay obviously had the back-to-back injuries, and with good timing, my phone just buzzed and I had a tweet Shout out Howard Beck had retweeted this. Klay Thompson, last five games, 24 points per game, 56 from long range. I only bring Klay up to kind of show that, you know, these guys that fight their way through physical stuff like Jamal, you know, it's going to be fits and starts. It's going to be even emotionally challenging for them. We've seen a lot of that with Klay, where he's almost, you know, kind of raging at anybody who dares to doubt, you know, what direction his game is going. Jamal has not been quite as emotive, but I guarantee you that that stuff is going on internally for him. And they have a lot on the line. If you go back to last year's playoffs, so we've talked about this before on the pod, I think it's so interesting that Jamal has since opened up publicly about the fact that, you know, physically he was able to play in last year's playoffs. And that's why at the time I reported that he looked like he was nearing his comeback. But the mental part of it, again, that we've seen Klay go through and guys like that, the mental part was too much. And he didn't want to be finding his way, you know, fighting around screens without the same pop as he had before, stuff like that in the middle of a playoff series. And so it has taken longer. And now it seems like, you know, kind of what you're saying is he's starting to get it back. And as much as I enjoyed watching peak Jokic when he had to do everything the past couple of years just because of the situation, that's not championship level basketball. And if Jamal can be Jamal, then that is what they have.
Jokic has also taken a break with his scoring this year too. Like it's, yeah, he's been great, and the advanced stats are like still off the chart with him, and he still could just backseat as a scorer right now. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. I feel like Denver has another gear. For the most part, I normally don't believe in off switch on switch teams that haven't actually won the title before. You know, like I've covered OKC teams.
Although Memphis comes to mind. I feel like Memphis operates that way. Even though they haven't really won anything, I feel like the Grizzlies do some of that.
Yeah, a little bit. But that's more injury-related stuff as opposed to just cruise control stuff. Like, they just haven't been healthy. They've had Jaren Jackson out, and, you know, they've had Dylan Brooks out, and they've just had injury stuff, and now they have Bane out. But I think, like, with Denver, I see it. I see Murray jumping up a level. I see playoff Jokic, which is normally totally a thing. Porter's, you know, they're taking it easy with Porter, who is, and Aaron Gordon, by the way, has really fit in wonderfully with that team this year. I think he's playing the exact way that I think you idealize Aaron Gordon, especially as a cutter at this point. He just looks so comfortable cutting next to Jokic. But Murray's the key. Like, if Murray can be a second best player of the caliber of a championship level team that you think he can be, then, you know, that's the key.
I have Slater. No deep Denver thoughts, but I'm ready to get to Brooklyn if you want.
Well, before we jump, just in for the sake of context, because I just peeked at it, you know, you talk about Jamal finding his way. 16.4 points at this point, shooting a 42%, you know, certainly below his career numbers and well below the 47.7 that he had in the bubble season. Or I guess that's the season after bubble. What are we looking at? Then we got 5 assists, you know, and 3.9 boards. So he's finding his way. But, you know, peak Jamal again was 21.2 points a game. So it'll be fun to see him just keep fighting his way back. All right, Slater, I think we're going to finish with these Nets. We just can't stop talking about them. So I guess don't worry, Fred, we're not going to officially talk about the Lakers. That's not going to be a topic this week. But the Nets, you talk about flipping the switch, and they've had their own injury stuff. They've had Kyrie stuff in and out. But my goodness, you know, you watch them one night and it's, you know, damn near an embarrassing effort. And then the next night they look pretty solid. So how do you see the direction for these Nets?
Yeah, I mean, you remember the day you're talking to, I'm sure you remember, talking to Ben Simmons, you know, in Sacramento.
Yes, I do, in fact.
And I would, you know, just looking at his
game.
Wouldn't
it be incredible if Sam just didn't remember that at all? Just had absolutely no recollection.
You mean Ben Simmons, whose godfather is the Sacramento State men's basketball coach? Okay, there's my weekly Sac State name drop. There we go. Okay, continue.
There you go. Yeah. I remember looking at his game log, I think that night, because we were both at the game. They lost to the Kings 153-121. But Ben Simmons, to that point, you know, points wise over the, this was like what, the first 8-9 games or so was 4-6-7, 4-7-9, 2-6-2, like barely shooting at all, barely making an impact, like in pretty much every measurable way. But that night, like that they got night? Absolutely blown out. We remember there was like, oh, like, well, at least Ben Simmons looked okay. That was like kind of the lone, you know, I guess silver lining for Brooklyn that night. And ever since then, he's, you know, you don't want to say erupted offensively, because a Ben Simmons offensive volcano is not exactly, you know, a fearsome one. But he had 11 that night against the Kings, and then he went 6 straight games in double figures, 15, 22, 11, 14, 20. He had a 7-of-9 game recently in a win in Toronto, an 8-of-8 game, 20 points against the Pacers. He's just looking a little bit more like the old Ben Simmons. And that,
Fred,
just
don't
adds
you love
an
how
element
he's
that they
leaving out last night's Portland performance? Don't you love how Slater's not mentioning the 34-minute, 1-for-3, 2-point? You know,
how about the 111-97 win over the Blazers that included 12 Ben Simmons rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals?
I'm just saying, holding, you're talking about scoring.
And holding the Blazers as a team to 97 points. That's a pretty good defensive effort.
It is.
I'm
nitpicking.
You know, you're correct. But this is a grander conversation about Ben Simmons playing better. Kyrie Irving obviously back in the fold at this point. Seth Curry's kind of in and out, but he's just appearing a little bit more. And Kevin Durant remains like, what, a top 5 player. Like, that doesn't seem to be slowing down.
Nope.
They, you know, if we're predicting things, right, that's what this is all about. They're sitting low play-in right now. I think they're going to be a playoff team. And I feel like that's probably, I don't want to say it's a controversial opinion, but like, that's very unknown at this point, and I'm predicting playoff team.
I think I'm with you there. And then at minimum, it's going to create, you know, an energetic playoff discussion about how, I mean, you know, the narrative at that point, oh, you know, this is why they play the game. And even with the bad chemistry and the bad vibes and all the different issues they've been through, that they've got the talent to beat anybody in the playoffs if they get their whole. So we'll talk about them until the end. And I would agree. I do not see them falling out of the playoff picture.
He's been much better defensively. I mean, Slater, you touched on it a little bit. I think the thing with him is like, their whole defense is banked on the fact that Ben Simmons can do everything. Like, that is their entire defensive strategy, because Nick Claxton can be solid, but he gets pushed around. And, you know, they're playing Simmons a lot at the five with guards and wings around him. And ultimately, their best lineup is going to have to include Joe Harris, KD and Kyrie, obviously, Ben Simmons, and probably another shooter out there, whether it's Seth Curry or somebody else. Like, they are going to need all those guys on the floor and then just have everybody run around. Simmons has been so much better defensively. He's been so much more physical. He was overfouling like crazy in the early season. That's not happening as much anymore. He's moving more fluidly. He's guarding guys on the perimeter and actually sticking with them, not getting driven by. He got blown by so much early in the year. It just looks so out of character and weird for someone who's as great as him defensively. I just think he looks so much more comfortable. He looks like someone who had a back injury and now has a back that's feeling.
Same thing we were talking about with Jamal Murray and Clay, right?
Yeah.
Give him time.
Totally.
Yeah. And there's really not much grace really in the conversation around any of them, I don't think, or not enough, I would argue. I mean, and Ben in particular, you know, I saw some television stuff recently with national commentators, you know, just glossing over the injuries that he had been on. Fred has to get out of here in a moment. So my last thought on that point, guys, is that they are 19th in defensive rating. And that is a marked improvement from the bottom of the barrel that they were just a couple weeks ago. I think I lost track of it here. I think they're sitting there at 14th in net rating. So they've got some promise, and we'll see where they take it. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to let y'all get out on that note. Appreciate you. It'll be fun to, you know, I'm sure we'll go back and see if these predictions were correct by the end of the year, right? We always keep score and keep ourselves accountable? No, not necessarily.
We didn't even get the promised Lakers segment.
I know. Well, we were a little brief today. I mean,
do you want to squeeze it in at the end here? Fred is leaving, and I can clear the floor for you. You might even get out of a fine if Fred's not on the
Fred,
call.
Fred, get out of here. It's Lakers
true.
Time.
I'm, before I bounce, I'm just preemptively fining Sam just like an overall amount. He's got to Venmo me $57. And then he can just talk about the Lakers all he wants while I'm
gone. I will do nothing of the sort. I've petitioned to the Athletic to get a raise solely based on Fred's fines. This is not acceptable. This was not part of the deal. You're getting nothing.
There is nothing in your contract that says that I can't fine you every time we talk about the Lakers. There's nothing.
That is probably accurate. I did not get that worked into my deal. All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon. And Slater and I are going to wrap it up on the Lakers front. All right, brother. Man, I don't know. Are Lakers going to turn it around? They look better. I kind of like the way they responded when LeBron was out, and Anthony Davis finding his way, being the guy that everybody knew that he needed to be going into the season. He was not that guy for the first month. As we sit here talking, heading into their Pacers game, they've won 5 out of 6. Jokes aside, we have taken quite a turn in terms of the way we talk about the Lakers because Russell Westbrook was, I think, rightfully so, discussed as, on the list of Lakers problems. There was Russ, and then there was a big gap before the number two reason, and that's just not the case anymore. Of course, his shooting numbers are still down. It's not pretty when you look across the board at his production, but he has by and large been part of the solution in that six-man role. And I kind of loved, I think Chris Haynes dropped this the other day on a TNT telecast, that Darvin Ham, their first-year coach, had partly pitched Russ on this role as a sixth man by saying that, it was going to be Russell and the Westbrooks, which I think is genius because it kind of just, I think, resonates with the way Russ thinks. Like, if you tell him that he has possession of that second unit and he can be the guy there, then that might awake the part of him that has been the guy everywhere else for his entire career. So, they're banged up, and again, LeBron's been dealing with issues and AD as well, but looking a whole lot better. They're 7-11 right now.
Man, it is nice to play the San Antonio Spurs 3 times out of four games right now.
Right.
And the Pistons. Look, you mentioned 5 of 6. Their 5 wins are Nets, Pistons, Spurs.
Yep.
But I will say, a lot of their early season trouble, what do they get off to, like 2-11 or whatever it was?
2-10.
They had a really tough schedule to start. So, it's balancing out. But I think, as we note, a turnaround, it's also the Spurs are losing to everybody these days. And they happen to just be playing the Lakers every other day, it seems like, right now.
Yeah, and those, I'm trying to look. Those have mostly been, some tight games in there. We'll see. I mean, the Pacers tonight, it's a tough game. They got Portland on Wednesday, and then Milwaukee, a tough one, and on the road for, 6-game road trip coming up. So we'll see what becomes of the Lakers. If we're talking about predicting turnarounds, at this point, it's are they going to make the playoffs is the only question with them. And I'm not sure at this point, to be honest with you, because the way we've broken down the West and made it so clear with the Minnesotas and the Sacramentos and all these different teams, even the Dallases, which is, flirting with non-playoff position right now, it's becoming more and more real that a squad like the Lakers, even with some of the talent they have, could be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, the only, saving grace for the Lakers or any team in the West, covering the Warriors, I've seen this with the Warriors that, as bad a start as they had, it was like, man, they're really not that far away from first. They're not that far away from sixth, because everybody is just clumped with the amount of losses, where right now the Lakers are 7-11, 11 losses. Well, you go up to the Clippers at the 5 seed right now, they're 12-9. They're 2 losses behind the Clippers. It is so early and everyone is so close together. You thought early Utah was a great story early on. Portland is. Well, Utah's now 12-10. Portland's now 11-9. Utah's lost 4 in a row. I'm looking in the last 10 for Portland, they're 4-6. It's just everybody's packed in there. So could they make the playoffs? I think the path is there, but you need a healthy LeBron for a majority of the season. More and more, that's becoming a bigger question mark. And probably a move that you still don't have clarity if they're actually going to ever pull the trigger or not on. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the power games within that are going to be worth monitoring too, because there is clearly, I think, a bit of a divide from the players to the front office to ownership regarding, what sort of move would be worth doing, what sort of move would be worth paying a certain price for. The question about LeBron and the idea that you just can't waste any of, you know, his later stages here at all, because, you know, on paper, we've talked about it before, there's that argument to be made to punt this season and get to the summer when you're going to have, you know, access to 3 first-round picks and all that cap room that would help them out. So if they are in the mix like they are right now, which, you know, this is the wild part, you're 5.5 games out of the top spot in the West. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, if they somehow rattled off a 6-7 game winning streak, you know, they'd be sitting there in a top 4 spot more than likely. So if that happened or anything close to it, then guarantee you internally the pressure is going to be applied to Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss to go get something done roster wise. And those are the dynamics in play here.
Yeah. I mean, but it's like, do we really believe this roster is good enough where it's one move away from like legitimate contention? And that does seem to be the threshold of like, do you put the both, you know, those first round picks, future first on the table? It's like, well, if you start to believe like, oh, there's a contender built within this, it just needs like a little, you know, tune up, a little boost. No, like that doesn't exist.
Although I will say I've turned a little bit on this because, man, like Miles Turner and Buddy Hield are balling out. And I almost wonder at this point, A, like we talked about before. Hold on. No, I see you coming.
Sam Amick. I'm liking this. The Lakers are a Miles Turner, Buddy Hield.
No, my only point is that those two guys, and I know this is an unpopular opinion in my backyard, in our backyard in Sacramento. You know, if neighbor John listens to this podcast, he'll go lose his mind over anything positive regarding Buddy Hield because he drove him and a lot of other fans crazy during his time in Sacramento. But he's shooting the lights out again. That's exactly what the Lakers need. You know, far and away, a better shooter than any guy they have on their team. And LeBron, I think Dave McMenamin had this in a piece today at ESPN about how LeBron's the three-point percentage for guys that he's finding open looks for in the league, I think he might lead the league and you know, just his teammates not hitting open threes that he creates. So, but enter Buddy Hield, that's going to help in a major way. Miles Turner, like, you know, Fred said earlier, still younger than most people assume, incredible rim protector and a guy who on the scoring side, you know, not even averaging 30 minutes a game, is scoring at a really high clip and having a career year. And those are two impact players that I don't, you know, you can never all the way predict how it would look if they jump on a new team, but I think it would help the Lakers a lot. The question then becomes, like we said earlier, are the Pacers ready to actually still give up those guys? Are they still looking for the same asking price? You know, is 2 first get it done? Because the Lakers felt like that was, you know, too steep before. They were hoping that price would go down. But just basketball-wise, I think my opinion has shifted a bit there. I think Miles and Buddy would help the Lakers quite a bit.
They'd help them quite a bit, but they'd help anybody quite a bit. I just don't think they put them over the top. And like, I don't view them as.
But if you're LeBron, it goes back to that discussion. All right, well, which player coming out of the 2027 draft is going to help LeBron at all?
Well, that's the, you know, I guess.
Or are you going to get the star this summer?
I guess clashing motives, where it's like, you know, LeBron even wants to fight for a 5 or 6 seed, I'm sure, right now. But if you're the Lakers, like, is it worth mortgaging the future beyond for a 5 or 6 seed? No, it's not. But is there enough of a franchise backbone to like hold off? I don't know.
Yeah. Do you want to deal with LeBron being, you know, not in a good place within your franchise? I think that's where this could be headed if they do nothing.
Yeah. Well, the December 15th is the date where all people who sign contracts in the offseason are eligible to be traded.
Correct. Yeah. All bottom line, all the scenarios open up and the phones start ringing quite a bit more than before. So a lot more guys will be in play. A lot more to talk about down the road. I'm going to let you go with that, my friend. You and I think, are you joining me out at the old Golden One this evening?
No, I will be there Wednesday night for the big Sabonis the big against Pacers Halliburton game. Clash.
Very good. We'll see you on Wednesday. Thank you, as always, to the listeners. We'll talk to you next week.